The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Glenn Beck.
3,000 migrants have just crossed the Honduran-Guatemala border en route to the United States. President Trump threatened both countries yesterday with pulling all financial aid if the two countries don't do something to stop it. Every year, we give about $100 million in aid to Guatemala, with a good majority going to their military and security services. Over the last 2 years, we've given Honduras over $260 million. A vast majority goes to keep their military and security apparatus up and running. In short, if we stop writing these checks, both Honduran and Guatemalan governments are going to have some very big problems on their hand. It's such a big issue that the Honduran president made a public address to his country yesterday. The foreign ministry also made a statement saying the government, quote, urges the Hondurans taking part in this irregular mobilization not to be used by a movement that is clearly political, end quote. Now, what does that mean? Well, it turns out that this caravan is different from the one coming from Mexico back in April. That previous caravan had serious backing in the form of manpower, organization, and money from George Soros. It was a strategic stunt. At that time, it dominated the media. That caravan was directed at causing waves here in the United States, but this current one is not directed to us at all. This is about the radical left-wing politics in Honduras. As the 3,000 migrants crossed into Guatemala, the Guatemala government detained one man. His name is Bartolo Fuentes. He is the organizer of this entire charade that, just like back in April, is beginning now to get massive coverage and even a tweet by President Trump. This is exactly what Fuentes and his merry band of leftists want. He's an ex-deputy of the Honduran Liberty and Refoundation Party. Their members are supporters of the former Honduran president that was ousted by the military in a coup back in 2009. Now, I want you to know, saying that they're leftist doesn't quite do it justice. They wanted to form a partnership with both Hugo Chavez and the Castros to create some sort of South American communist mega alliance. The former president was ousted on the eve of a special election where he wanted to rewrite the Constitution to make sweeping changes. His followers, like this current caravan organizer, never forgot, and they've been staging political stunts ever since to try to undermine the more right-leaning, non-communist government. The use of these migrant caravans, I want you to know, is only going to get worse. Leftists like Soros, and even this group in Honduras, have no qualms at all with using men, women, and children in incredibly dangerous situations to further their Marxist policies. They don't care about these people. They are doing exactly the same thing that Hamas is doing with the Palestinians in Gaza. They want a showdown at the U.S. border. And you better believe that they want the cameras rolling when it happens.
It's Wednesday, October 17th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So we have Bill O'Reilly coming up in about an hour. I'm going to be gone for the next couple of days, and Bill is going to come in and give us the rundown of the week so far. And we have a lot to discuss. One of them is Saudi Arabia. This story is just getting more and more bizarre. Let me bring you up to speed in case you don't know. The story started a couple of weeks ago with this idea that this Washington Post reporter is suddenly missing. Well, he's not a Washington Post reporter only. His name is Jamal Khashoggi, and he is a Saudi Arabian citizen. He is also a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. His beef with Saudi Arabia in his own what he called self-imposed exile is all about the Saudis not befriending and not excusing the behavior of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Saudis are very clear that the Muslim Brotherhood is a terrorist organization and not a friend to Saudi Arabia or really anyone in the world. So he went into self-imposed exile, and he came here to the United States. There are claims that he was still a Muslim Brotherhood operative. There are also claims that he was feeding us information against the Muslim Brotherhood. I'm not sure which to believe at this point. So he's overseas. He's in Turkey. And he's going to get married, but he's been divorced to his wife in Saudi Arabia. For him to be able to get remarried, he has to have a divorce certificate from Saudi Arabia. The Saudi Arabians say, well, you're going to have to come into the embassy to get it. Now, he is not a friend to the Saudi Arabian prince, the one who has been this big reformer, and he's going to, you know, take Saudi Arabia into the future, and he's good for women, and he's good for human rights and everything else. Khashoggi is not popular with that prince, and that prince has not been popular with Khashoggi. He had been trying to get Khashoggi to come back to Saudi Arabia, but Khashoggi knew that would probably be a death sentence to me. He takes his fiance, they get into a car, and they drive up to the embassy, the Saudi embassy in Istanbul. He says, I'm going to go in, I'm going to get the paperwork, they're expecting me, I'll be right back out, wait for me. So she did. Hours pass. She starts to call the embassy. She calls his phone. No answer. Nothing. As it turns out, Saudi Arabia first denied that any of this happened. But we now know that they are about to admit. We don't know to what extent, but it looks as though he was interrogated, tortured, and killed. He was then hacked into pieces and thrown onto a Saudi plane in suitcases. And what happened from there, we don't know. Now, there's an additional update today. We have our Secretary of State over in Saudi Arabia meeting with the king and the crown prince, who are now saying privately that, yes, this was just somebody who went rogue. But it's kind of hard to believe. The new information today, now this is coming from Turkey, so we don't know if this is true or not. There were two stories. One, the United States came out pretty quickly last week when this story broke and said, we have evidence that this was ordered by Saudi Arabia and he is dead. But they never released where that came from. They just released that this was U.S. intelligence sources say. That was the first nick. Then the Turks came out and said that they had audio and videotape of this man's interrogation, torture, and killing. I don't know if they do. There is a possibility that they have microwave technology that could listen if the Saudi embassy was not prepared to deal with that kind of surveillance. You can get that kind of audio from inside of a building. But there's also another story that this actually audio arrived first with his fiance because he had an Apple Watch. And when he went in, he turned it on and it recorded. And when it finished recording, it just uploaded to the cloud and downloaded to her phone. I hope to God that's not true for her sake. I can't imagine. especially since we now are getting the story that this audio that we don't know yet if it exists includes his interrogation and then the executioners come in. And the head of the embassy said, you can't kill him. You can't kill him in here or I'm going to get into trouble. And the what's described as the pathologist from Saudi Arabia, the guy who was in charge of killing and disposing of the body, apparently said to the head of the embassy, if you want to live, you need to get out of here right now. Otherwise, you're next. They knocked Khashoggi unconscious, and he was unconscious for a while. Then you hear them apparently starting to get all of the tools and everything ready and the room ready to start to chop him up. He is still alive when they are dismembering him, and apparently it is a gruesome, gruesome tape. We, again, don't know if that is true. This may be an Archduke Ferdinand moment down the road. This may be the thing that sets the world on fire that doesn't seem like the thing that could set the world on fire. But Saudi Arabia is our ally. We are currently fighting the war on terror with Saudi Arabia. We're currently fighting a proxy war with Saudi Arabia in Yemen. We are getting ready to sell billions of dollars worth of war machinery to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is quietly supportive of Israel now in the Middle East and are taking strong stands to support Israel. They are also an ally with us against Iran. They are a balance of power. If this tape exists and this tape comes out, we have all known that Saudi Arabia is a bad place, but we have not heard the screams. If this tape exists and comes out, people of the world will forever think of Saudi Arabia and put them in the same class as Stalin, as Hitler, as Mao, or as Kim Jong-un. In North Korea. But we remember North Korea's crimes we only have sketches of. If this tape exists and comes out, it's a game changer that could destabilize everything. We'll go back into this story in a second. First, let me tell you our sponsor is 1-800-Flowers.com. The first roses of autumn have arrived now. 1-800-Flowers.com. They're beautiful roses. They're in shades of red, orange, and yellow. They're radiant. The best flowers you'll see all year are being picked right now. Autumn roses from 1-800-Flowers, the best way to brighten the day for your friends, your loved ones, your wife. Right now, 1-800-Flowers has 36 for 36. 36 autumn roses for $36. That's a dollar per rose. Beautiful arrangements in fall red, orange, and yellow. Perfect for birthdays, anniversaries. Good for the upcoming holidays. You know, also, you know, not bad for screw-ups. They're picked at their peak. They're shipped overnight to ensure their freshness. It's 36 autumn roses for $36. Call now, 1-800-Flowers, or go to 1-800-Flowers.com, 1-800-Flowers.com. Click on the radio microphone or icon and enter the promo code BECK. You'll get the 36 for 36. 1-800-Flowers.com, promo code BECK. This offer, you better hurry. It ends Friday. Oh. So, the Saudi Arabia thing is a mess, but we don't know anything for sure because we don't have the evidence. Now, maybe the United States has the evidence. The president has the evidence. I don't know. It's all coming from Turkey. And Turkey is motivated to destroy Saudi Arabia, possibly to destroy the West, if you want to look at that. They're looking to build a caliphate. But they also may be playing another game to get closer to the United States.
Yeah, I mean, there's an argument to be made. They've released this pastor recently, and they want to maybe send the signal, hey, these guys you're dealing with in Saudi Arabia, they're bad. You should be dealing with us more. You should be selling us arms. You should be working with us more closely. And they're trying to ingratiate themselves to the United States at the expense, more specifically, at the expense of Saudi Arabia, because they don't like that, the closeness of that relationship. There's an argument to be made there. I mean, I think a lot of this is you have to take, when you have two countries that really disagree with each other and don't like each other, you have to take the reports coming out of Turkey with some level of a grain of salt. I mean, you have to, we need more evidence than there's a tape. If there's a tape that at least we don't need to hear it necessarily. Porter, somewhere who, with some credibility, needs to hear them and confirm that they exist, because we've heard a lot of details about what is on this tape, but we have not, obviously.
See, if I were Erdogan, I would not release the tape. If I had it, mm-hmm. I wouldn't release it yet. I would let Saudi Arabia play this all out. Because remember, last week it was, no, this is crazy. This is conspiracy. This is nuts. Mm-hmm. Now it seems that they are saying, yeah, those things happen. So now let's see Saudi Arabia.
But again, we that's all sources too. Come out and said, oh, this is a rogue thing that went wrong, or an interrogation that went wrong. There are reports through CNN that they're going to say that,
right?
But they haven't actually said it yet,
and we don't know where that is coming from yet.
Yeah, I will say that there's no need for us to rush to judgment here. No. And I know, like, people are bashing Trump because he kind of said, "Oh, well, it's a guilty until proven innocent." Well, first of all, we should get evidence. If we've learned everything over international relations over the past 20 years, is we should make sure we have these things right.
Yes.
There's also, it's not like, okay, it's weapons of mass destruction, for example, to use one that works in this context, where we could be facing an imminent threat of, you know, a bomb going off in a place that kills a lot of people that, you know, we may be able to stop. This is a prosecution of a crime. Right. Mm-hmm. In our eyes. And if they have actually killed this person, they need to be held responsible. However, we don't need to make that decision tomorrow.
No, nope.
We need to make sure that we get it right. We need to actually figure out all the dynamics going on. Just because this is a media phenom today does not mean we need to make a decision today. We and just have to make sure we actually take it seriously and look at the facts.
Only a media phenom because it involved a reporter.
Yeah, and the story is so dramatic. As you point out, what was it?
It wasn't the first
Hitchcock movie.
Yeah, right. Rear Window.
Right, Rear Window. I mean, it, you know, it's such a dramatic Hollywood-type crazy 24, you know, Jack Ryan story that you wonder. I mean, it's capturing our attention, which is okay. It's just that we have to make sure we're looking at where this stuff is coming from. Right now, it's coming from people with incentive to make Saudi Arabia look bad. My guess is, because I think Saudi Arabia, they're not our friends. They've done a lot of really bad things. This prince took his own, you know, family members and other princes hostage in a hotel and likely stole tons of their wealth, including planes. And these specific planes are the ones accused of flying in and taking the remains out in suitcases.
So these are the planes the prince confiscated from other family members.
I mean,
as he held them, you know, in a, you know, Ritz-Carlton prison.
So it's a legitimate worry that this guy is an absolute Kim Jong-un style maniac. And if that's happening with Saudi Arabia, it's a lot worse than it's happening, you know, in North Korea in a lot of ways. I mean, we already have a relationship with Saudi Arabia. They're very influential in that region.
We know they do this stuff.
But we know this stuff goes on in this region already. And we deal with all these countries that do it.
Right.
But we just have to make sure that there's no reason to feel pressure to not go through an intelligence, you know, full look at this before you start making public proclamations.
And you better take this tape seriously, because if I were holding the tape, I would hold it until I see exactly how the United States and Saudi Arabia kind of finagled around and calmed everybody down. And then when everybody says, okay, this is over and they're not such bad guys and this was a mistake, that's when I dump the tape.
If they don't do what you want them to do, if you're Turkey, that's when you dump
the tape.
You
dump the tape, because it's that destroys what credibility Saudi Arabia has ever had. And with me, they've had very little. They're not friends of ours. They are not friends of ours. They are selling us crap that, quite honestly, I live in Texas. We don't need it. We don't need it. Open up the fields here in Texas. Start pumping again and bring the price of oil down. And let's get off of Saudi Arabia. We don't need it. But We'll watch this closely. It's a ticking time bomb. Back in a sec. A new poll finds that among entertainers, which is an interesting word for this, the most divisive celebrities in America, the number one, I don't think you'd ever guess, number two was Sean Hannity. Number three, Rush Limbaugh. I don't put them in the entertainer's role, but then Ellen, LeBron James.
Ellen is a device. I mean,
I know.
That seems like not a divisive character.
Jay-Z, Katy Perry, Lady Gaga, Rihanna, and George Clooney.
What?
Yeah.
That's a weird list.
Well, who's number one? Beyonce.
That's really weird. Is that based on her Super Bowl performance?
I don't even know.
Or she sort of celebrated the Black Panthers? Is that
maybe? Maybe. I mean, haven't we got over that yet? I mean, we've had a lot of other things that we've had to worry about since then.
Interestingly, missing from that list, which you would have once always been on, is Glenn Beck.
Yeah. Well, I'm not in that world anymore.
I do think people have united in dislike for Glenn. I think that's something that's happened.
Wait, hold on.
I know it's happened in this room, but I mean, yes. I think it's happened across America.
Wait a minute. Welcome to the program, Mr. Pat Gray, who now does mornings on the Blaze Radio Network. Mm-hmm. And Steve Dace is doing the show immediately following this one. Steve is on loan from CRTV. And we're pleased to have him. He's really, really good and really smart. And Pat, of course, is, I think, the best morning man in America. So don't miss him every
morning.
You're
only saying that because it's true. So
I was actually being humble. I was counting myself out this particular time because that's the kind of guy I am. So humble.
Anyway, thank you.
So, Pat, welcome to the program. Did you watch Cruz and Beto last night?
Yeah, wasn't that? It was fun.
Riveting.
It was riveting and fun. I think they're really going after each other. I think these two guys genuinely dislike each other, and I know I dislike one of them a great deal.
Gee, I wonder which one.
Can you guess?
Yeah, well, you're Irish.
It starts in B and ends in Edo.
Interestingly, you don't seem to like the one who is the white dude, and you like the Hispanic.
Isn't that interesting?
Race, which is not consistent with your...
Fascinating. Did you notice, too, that his name is actually going to appear as just Beto... Well, Beto O'Rourke on the ballot.
But that's
it's not going to be Robert Francis Beto. In it is unbelievable.
Well, no,
that's
wait a minute. Neither is Ted.
I know, but please, what is Raphael?
Yes, you know it's funny.
I think that with the quotes, it's an easy way to do it, right? Like Raphael Ted Cruz is fine.
Yeah.
Beto is a nickname, though.
It is a nickname. I don't buy that it's been his since he was five.
Maybe.
Did anybody buy that?
Maybe. He's from El Paso. Maybe.
I thought it was when he was a teenager he got that nickname, no?
Well, when he appeared on... And we play this audio all the time on Pat Gray Unleashed. But when he appeared on the El Paso TV morning show back in, I think it was 92 or 93. And he was with his punk rock band. They called him Bob. They called him Bob there. So... I don't know that it was even he even had it then, because the host didn't refer to him that way at all, and he didn't correct him. So I don't know.
What's interesting is Ted changed or used the name Ted to be more, I guess, American, if you will. Mm-hmm. Also, I think to separate himself from his father, Raphael. Mm-hmm. But that came really early.
Yeah.
And here's an Irish guy. It changes his name.
Trying to identify as Hispanic.
Yeah, trying to be more Hispanic. It's crazy.
He also went so far as back in 2012, he tried to join the Hispanic caucus in the Congress. And they said no.
He did not.
He did. Yeah, he tried to get into the Hispanic caucus. Because some of the El Paso residents, his district is 77% Hispanic. So some of the residents were upset that Sylvester Reyes was no longer going to be in the pretty powerful Hispanic caucus. So he tried to join it. They're like, no, the nickname's not enough. Sorry.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, if we go to the intersectionality of Beto, nobody's intersecting him.
No.
Nobody's intersecting him. No. He is still at the top of the hierarchy and the patriarchy pyramid.
I have to think one of my favorite parts of the debate last night was when Beto tried to make this case that every decision Ted Cruz makes is about money. So, like, he supports the Second Amendment, and that's because of the NRA, and he supports this cause. And it's like, you've brought in $38 million of donations.
Right.
You are outraising Cruz by, what, 4-1, 5-1? And, of course, as Cruz pointed out, he's had plenty of special interest money come in. It's just coming in through other names. It's coming in through PACs that he, quote-unquote, doesn't control, which we all know how that game goes. I mean, the idea that you're going to come out and make an argument about how Ted Cruz is about money when the entire story arc of Beto is based on the fact that he can raise money well. He's not competitive in this race. He has never accomplished anything.
Now. Yeah.
He is only in the race to run for 2020.
But if he loses, how does he run for 2020?
I don't know, but they're still talking about him.
They are.
Even De Niro was talking about him.
No. He's their John F. Kennedy.
He's the great Democrat hope now.
And may I say, the great white hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been fascinating to watch this. He also tried to pin Ted up against Donald Trump, since they have the big rally coming up, what is it, next Wednesday or Thursday in Houston, and by calling him Lion Ted, like Trump did. And he said that's why the president called him Lion Ted, and it's why his nickname stuck, because it's true.
Ugh.
Which has never...
It's never stuck, and it's never true.
It's never stuck. It's never been true. And what prompted him to say that about Beto was that he had voted for a bill that would raise the price of oil 24 cents a gallon, to put a $10 surcharge on every barrel of oil, which would raise the price about 24 cents.
The price of gas.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So Beto said that was untrue, but he voted against a bill that would have stopped that bill. So it really is true that he did. But they can both kind of claim that they have the truth on their side in that particular case. But it was interesting to me because CNN fact-checked Beto on some things that he's been lying about during the campaign, one being that his mother's a lifelong Republican.
I love this.
Lifelong Republican.
Right.
But now, you know, because he's so wonderful and he's so uniting,
yeah,
she's going to vote for him.
For the first time. She's a lifelong...
That is something. First of all... Your mom is going to vote for you? Wow. What a revelation.
Wow.
You got your mom to vote for you?
Right. And help me out, Pat, because I think CNN even looked into this one.
They sure did.
Yeah.
And yeah,
they find?
He voted for a hardcore Republican named Barack Obama in 2008.
Right. Oh, Barry Obama?
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Now
yeah.
Here, Barry.
God, Barry. Yeah.
Okay, so here's the interesting thing. I love this part of the expose from CNN. And she can't remember who she voted for in 2016.
Wait, you remember 10 years ago, but not two. Weird.
Really? You don't know who you voted for.
You know, she voted for Hillary and just didn't want to say it. Didn't want to say it.
She couldn't. If she voted for Trump, it would work to his advantage.
Yeah.
She was there. She was part of the Trump thing.
Yeah.
You know, she wanted change. She wanted this. It would have worked.
Right.
So,
but you can't use that.
She voted for Obama
in 08,
this lifelong Republican, and then she can't remember in 16.
The other interesting aspect is that this lifelong Republican has voted in every single Democratic primary in Texas since 2000.
That's awesome.
And even went so far as donating money to the Obama campaign in 07.
I love this the Federalist on this too. I know a lot about Beto, but at the same time, I don't know much about Senate candidate Josh Hawley, who is 38 years old, meaning, you know, around 8 years younger than rising star Beto, the attorney general of Missouri and the Republican nominee for the U.S. Senate. What I do know is that Hawley is slightly leading McCaskill, a two-time incumbent in the average poll, in a race that could decide which party controls the Senate. O'Rourke, who's up against Ted Cruz, an incumbent, is down 7 points and falling. It wouldn't be completely surprising if Cruz ends up winning Texas by nearly the same margin he did in 2012. As with Hawley, I didn't know much about Arizona's GOP Senate nominee, Martha McSally, either. I'm probably not alone. She didn't get to kibitz with Stephen Colbert or Ellen DeGeneres. Maybe if she used the nickname she was given to her as a teen, she would have a better luck getting attention from the national media. Anyway, what could one of the highest-ranking female pilots in the history of the Air Force and first woman pilot on a combat mission possibly have to offer to Colbert's audience?
Oh, my gosh. Get her on the air. Awesome, I want to talk to her on the air.
I mean, after all, Beto did skateboard through a Whataburger parking lot. McSally, by the way, also has a chance to win. I think she's going to win in Arizona. I think she has a really good chance. That's another really tight race. I would also bring up John James into this conversation. We've talked to him before. He's a Senate candidate with a great military background in Michigan.
Yeah.
He's got a much tougher race, but he's another great story. These guys get no attention, but Beto, because I don't know, he's I guess a good looking guy, and he's, you know,
he's got neck muscles.
He's got neck muscles. He's very shiny. As you may have noticed in the debate, I mean, he's real. He's almost like his face has a mirror painted onto it. It was so shiny.
He's new and shiny.
He's new and shiny. And I guess that's what we want.
Look at the shiny thing. Look at the shiny thing.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
Welcome back to the program. We want to remind you that we are out and about. We are coming to a city near you, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be happening right around election time. And we have some 2020, you know, election suggestions. I'm just because I'm a helper. I'm a helper. Stu, you're a helper. And we just want to help the Democratic Socialist out. We've got some extra spending, maybe, that they could consider, some slogans.
I don't necessarily think extra spending is possible compared to what they're supporting.
We're
going to
do the
proposing.
Math.
But
we're
going
to do the math. I don't think they've taken every dime.
That's true.
It would be
difficult to find more to spend or different ways to spend them.
Yes.
Remember Brewster's Millions? Remember this classic documentary from the 1980s in which Richard Pryor was forced to spend $30 million in 30 days. And if he did so successfully from a inheritance, he would receive the full inheritance of $300 million. This is an important moment in our culture. But it was difficult because he couldn't take any assets. So he couldn't buy a $30 million car, right? He had to have zero assets at the end of it. And the idea was kind of like the thing where you do with your kids where you, you know, don't actually do this, but like in the legend of like you have your kid smoke three packs of cigarettes, he gets sick and never wants to smoke another cigarette, right?
Right.
So that's kind of the idea. Make sure you get sick of spending money so you're good with money from then on was the idea in the movie, in the documentary. But how did he wind up actually, and this is a spoiler alert from 1983, but how did he wind up spending all the money? He decided to run a political campaign. It was the easiest way to get rid of all of the money at once. So I think, you know, this is kind of at the aspect where the Democrats are, which is, can they figure out another way to spend money?
We may even do a little Brewster's Millions where you come up on stage and you are a Democratic Socialist and you have to spend $60 trillion. You do it?
It's harder than you think.
It is harder than you think. Can you do it? The socialists already have, but can you do it?
It's very difficult.
Right.
It's very difficult.
Right.
So, yeah, we're going to go over that on the tour. Glennbeck.com/tour is the place to go, by the way, to get the tickets.
Grab your tickets. Bill O'Reilly's coming up in just a few minutes, and we have a lot to talk to him about. I don't know if you've seen this, but Minnesota's Democratic farmer labor party this last weekend said Republicans should be brought to the guillotine on November 7th.
That's okay though. That's not as bad as saying you want to target a district to take it over, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The guillotine is, I mean, you know, that's common language. People always say that. Ah, bring a guillotine. We put those, you know, whoever into a guillotine.
Now, I assume, I hate to say this, but I assume they're not actually building guillotines to put Republicans in.
I'm not sure.
I'm not 100% sure.
I'm not sure at this
anymore.
Point. I think, I do think Antifa, you know, could be talked into it pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. Antifa probably could.
Yeah.
Roger Williams, the congressman, pointed this out in an op-ed he wrote for the Dallas Morning News, talking about how he was, I don't know, on a baseball field being shot at. And kind of remembers that and is maybe not so positive on this new Democratic way of thinking, where they're saying, Eric Holder, when Republicans go low, we kick them. Cory Booker says, get up in the face of congresspeople. Maxine Waters, harass members of the Trump administration. Hillary Clinton, we cannot be civil. All of these things are maybe a little bit more impactful to someone who was being shot at by a Bernie Sanders volunteer on a baseball field and watching Steve Scalise almost be killed.
Yeah, but what's worse? Those things, the guillotine or horse face? Seriously, what's worse?
Wow, that's a great point.
I mean, one of those things deserves 24/7 coverage.
Oh, I know which one it is. It's definitely the one that's on Twitter.
Right. It's it's horse face.
It's definitely got to be horse face. It's a much more serious issue.
And we all know that, you know, saying horse face, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, the question is, what's worse, horse face or the Rwandan genocide? I'm on the fence on that part of it. I'm not sure. They're so close,
right,
and deserve the equal amount of coverage. By the way, right, horse face will get more coverage than the Rwandan genocide ever did.
Yes.
It already has. In 2 days.
And funny, I believe horse face may have already beaten the baseball shooting coverage as well.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Let me give you a little science fiction. Imagine a world where Hillary Clinton was elected president. A lot would change. Longtime Clinton friend Harvey Weinstein probably would still have his career as a powerful Hollywood producer because there would be no Me Too movement. In fact, Malia Obama would still be working as an intern for Weinstein. There's no Women's March, no Kavanaugh confirmation hearing. The left goes about each day just as smug and self-righteous, badgering the subhuman scum that voted for Donald Trump. President Clinton is a domineering president. She continues her rhetoric about deplorables, further alienating large swaths of the country. People have hoped for a different future, but their lives now are just an object of ridicule. There's no more weekly protests, no riots, nothing like the circus on television. And slowly America rots to its core, and women everywhere have to take orders from a woman who repeatedly defends her husband who, well, you know. Thankfully, that's not the way things went. In fact, they've gone a way that I don't think any of us really could have even imagined. They've gone very differently. And Vox recently posted an article titled Hillary Clinton's Defense of Bill Clinton is Why Women Don't Come Forward. Now, if you're Hillary Clinton, you know things are bad when Vox is turning on you. Everyone is turning their back on her. She's really like a plague, a curse. She's like, you know, the return of polio. There was like, wait, what's happening? We got to stop that. The Vox article opens with a very telling line. The rise of the hashtag Me Too movement has prompted many politicians and public figures to reexamine President Bill Clinton's relationship with Monica Lewinsky. What? But Monica Lewinsky is not the one. Now, this is a reference to the recent backlash that Hillary has faced after unequivocally saying that her husband was right not to resign during the Lewinsky scandal. She then took it further, claiming that the relationship between then President Clinton and Monica Lewinsky was not an abuse of power. Well, wait a minute. I thought that's what everyone is supposed to believe, that if you are not aged or you're not on the same power structure, well, then it's abuse. And I also thought we were all supposed to believe all women. Isn't that what the protest signs say? Do I need new glasses? In the Me Too era, it's slowly coming out that one of the greatest villains is the woman who is very nearly the president of this country. She typifies everything that feminism decries. As the Vox article concludes, Hillary Clinton will always have a place in feminist history. Really? But when history of Me Too is written, she may be remembered as someone who supported women until their words hit too close to home. So no matter how bad you think things are, just remember one thing. That was science fiction. It could have been much, much worse.
It's Wednesday, October 17th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Bill O'Reilly joins us today. He's not going to be with us on Friday. Bill, I don't know why the left is trying to make a hero now out of Monica Lewinsky. Monica Lewinsky, let her get on with her life, for the love of Pete. The one that really needs to be reexamined is Juanita Broderick.
Well, it's not going to happen. I mean, it's a bigger picture. First of all, Beck, I'm addicted to outrage like you are. I'm just addicted to outrage.
Yes, I know.
The bigger picture here is this. The Democratic Party is confused now. They don't know what to do, all right? Juanita Broderick claimed that Bill Clinton tried to rape her. The press never in a million years is going to give that allegation any exposure at all. None. It's not going to happen. So you could talk about it. I could talk about whatever.
She had much more. I mean, she was credible. She was
okay,
credible.
It's just not going to happen. They're not going to get back into it. And they didn't report it when it happened.
Okay, so but why are they then getting into the Monica Lewinsky thing?
Because they have to at least acknowledge that Hillary Clinton, beyond all rationality, is putting herself out there in these positions where she has to relitigate this stuff. Now, the reason she's doing it is she wants to remain relevant so she can run again for president. No, I'm serious.
Come on. Come on, really?
Beck, I'm telling really you, you know that I'm the most brilliant political analyst in the country.
No, I don't know.
I am telling you that she wants to run again for president in 2020.
No, I know she wants to run. Do you really think she will?
It depends. Depends a lot on Biden. It depends a lot on whether she feels that the field against her is weak, which it is. It's absolutely weak. But the bigger picture is that the Democratic Party doesn't know what to do with Bill and Hillary Clinton. They don't know what to do with them. All right. So Bill Clinton and Hillary are going on a road and talk to their devoted supporters. This isn't an accident. This is a trial. I mean, to see how many people show up, how enthusiastic they are. Bill will say, look, when I was president, we did all this, and Hillary was a great first lady, and she did all this, and then she was a great senator, and she was a great secretary of state. That's what this is. It's ginning it up across the country to see how it's going to fly. But if you think Hillary Clinton is just going to go away quietly into the night, she's not. She wants to be president. And she realizes that the Democratic field, as it stands now, is extremely weak. Who's going to vote for Elizabeth Warren? I mean, that Native
not the
American
Cherokee
thing,
people.
No, that crushed her.
Yeah, it's horrible.
It crushed her. The Boston Globe thought it was doing her a favor by saying, oh, yeah, we, she got a little bit of blood in there. But and then the Cherokee Nation, the Cherokees themselves came out and said, knock it off, will you? She's not Cherokee. This is a total ruse and fraud. Knock it off. The Cherokee Indians themselves.
It's crazy.
Okay? And Warren used that ruse, as I say in my message of the day on BillO'Reilly.com today, used the ruse to advance her career in academia. So, and this is a woman who thinks she's going to win an election? She's not. Only in Massachusetts and maybe in Oregon, you know, these states that she could get into the Senate. But as a national viable candidate, no way.
Bill, as the nation's number one political strategist, how could she come out with this whole thing, Elizabeth Warren, without having someone on record from the Cherokee Nation to support her? I mean, how did she not see this coming?
She has her grandmother who once told her when she was three that she had high cheekbones, and that's because way, 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 way back, she was a Cherokee.
It just
so
doesn't.
Her grandmother, you know, was a source of all of this. But look, getting back to Beck's Hillary Clinton scenario, Hillary Clinton is a woman who is obsessed.
Oh, yeah.
All right? She doesn't fit into the Me Too movement. Uh-huh. Obviously, she doesn't fit in there because she has her husband. And she doesn't fit into the far left, even though she panders to them all the time, because
she's corrupt.
Basically,
she's the system.
Yeah, she's a system, a pal, what they call in New York. She's a pal. So, but she and her husband, and I spent, I was at the Yankee game, and I talked to Bill Clinton for about 20 minutes, as I mentioned to you last time I was on. She and her husband say, you know what? They may not like us, they being the Democratic voters, but we're so much better than what is up there now. I mean, Michael Bloomberg is going to run for president on a Democratic ticket. And, you know, outside of New York, nobody knows who Bloomberg is. Very smart guy, by the way. Extremely intelligent. All right. But he doesn't really have much of a chance, but he's got a lot of dough. He's got a lot of money, and he'll be in there. But other than that, you tell me, if Biden doesn't go, and Biden, I think, is going to be 98 years old next year. I don't know. He's an older senior citizen.
I will tell you this, Bill. You know who I think is positioning for a run? And I don't think in 2020, but I think 2024. I don't think it's going to be Hillary Clinton that will be the first lady that becomes president. I think it could be Michelle Obama.
Maybe. I'm not sure whether Michelle Obama has the drive, but certainly she would be formidable. And then there's Barack, and it's the reverse, you know. Mm-hmm. But they don't have the resume. I mean, the Obamas, even if you don't like them, I mean, they conducted themselves pretty well personally.
I'm not sure you need I'm not sure you need the resume. I mean, I heard The Rock say, you know, if I'm going to seriously do this, I've got to actually run something. I can't just be in movies. And I thought to myself, I'm not sure that matters. I'm really,
it doesn't matter anymore. Trump has smashed that, but it's certainly a plus for Michelle Obama because she doesn't have any little attachments. And so that, you know, that's not going to be a diversion. So you might be right there. I mean, I don't know her that well. I met her a few times. I know she was very powerful in the White House,
mm-hmm.
extremely powerful, mm-hmm. and that was kept very quiet.
And
you
I
might
think
be right. You might, you know, this isn't her time the next time around. She don't want to go up against Trump. Certainly doesn't want to do that. But in 2024, absolutely, she could, if she wanted it, I think the Democratic Party would rally around her.
Yeah. All right. When we come back, I want to talk to you about Antifa and what is going on in the streets of Portland. More with Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. And don't forget, his new book is out, Killing the SS, which is fantastic. Pick it up and grab my book at the same time. Buy them as a set. I think that's what Amazon is recommending. People who bought this too. So grab them because they're both really good. All right. Liberty Safe. Liberty Safe, the number one safe manufacturer in the nation. They have sold more than 2 million safes, and they've done it for a reason. Liberty Safe leads the industry in technology and innovation, offering the exclusive features like military-style locking bars, heat-expanding fire seal, which is really important. All of the full-size safes come with a lifetime warranty.
And if you happen to have an issue, like a lot of people do, with 1,000-pound weights falling from high distances on top of your safe, you'll want to have a Liberty Safe, as they proved on their website.
You got to go see this. It's just fun. Yeah. Even if you're not wanting to buy a safe right now, it is just so fun. You just go to LibertySafe.com and just look at their video. They dropped a 1,000-pound concrete block from a crane on a competitor safe and on theirs, and it's awesome to watch. Liberty's having their Frankenstein event for the holiday. Liberty's customer favorite, the Franklin series. Plus, you can save on the exclusive Reaper series safe. So whether you have jewelry, cash, documents, you just want to protect your guns, whatever it is, Liberty Safe. Liberty Safe, now is the time to become an owner with their 12-month interest-free financing on approved credit. It's LibertySafe.com. Go there now, LibertySafe.com. I'll play some audio for you from Portland. This is a woman who is standing waiting to cross the street. She is a widow of a New York police officer who lost his life on 9/11. And Antifa is standing behind, and they are just, well, listen, here it is.
Why are you trying to block me? I'm trying to walk here.
I obey traffic signals.
You're a snarky little idiot. Shut the up.
Try something.
I'm not going to punch you. I'm not like your husband. I'm not going to punch you.
I'm not afraid.
I'm not like your boyfriend or your cop boyfriend who's going to knock you out, so don't worry.
My husband died in 9/11.
Good for him. Good. Good. Those NYPD were a bunch of sodomizing immigrants with their bully sticks. So yeah, your husband probably should rot in the grave.
Bill?
Yeah. Look, the good news is there aren't many of these people. It's not like Germany where the SA and Antifa are the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same people. The SA were Hitler's street thugs who went out and beat up anybody who opposed Nazism and all that. And they were they had little uniforms, little brown shirts. They ran around, and the authorities did the same thing they're doing in Portland, Oregon. They stepped back and let these SA bully boys beat up innocent people and insult them like that. Exactly the same.
Yeah.
No difference.
This happens.
I want everybody to get that.
Yeah, this happens. I mean, it happened with the black shirts as well in Italy. This is...
Yeah, the Mussolini's guy. And
that's what
blueprint.
They do.
That's the blueprint.
Right.
Okay, so here's the story. I used to work in Portland, Oregon. I worked at Channel 2 there. And beautiful place, beautiful state. But Multnomah County, where Portland is located, is a far-left hippie place. And it has been that for many, many years, where they are permissive. They want the farthest left politicians they can get, and they have it. So now you got a guy, Wheeler, the mayor of the town, who runs a police bureau, that's what they call it there, who basically says, I'm not going to enforce the law, not going to do it, and that poor woman is going to be assaulted verbally and not allowed to walk where she wants. And that's okay with me, Mayor Ted Wheeler. That's fine. And I'm going to tell my officers, don't help that woman. Don't interfere there. And also, I'm going to let Antifa surround the ICE headquarters, and I'm going to let them do pretty much whatever they want to do, including fighting on the street, using masks over their faces, carrying weapons. They can do whatever they want to do. Now, this is America. You would think the people of Portland, Oregon would rise up, right? That they would go out in the Rose City with signs condemning the mayor and Antifa en masse, tens of thousands of them. They gather by the Willamette River with their signs, this is not the city we want. Do you got anybody out there doing that?
Mm-mm.
Nobody. So this is the problem. The problem is not Wheeler. The problem is not Antifa. The problem is the people in Portland, Oregon. And that's why I wrote Killing the SS, because I'm saying we better wake up here in America. We better wake up and confront evil, and Antifa is evil.
So,
did I get my point across, guys?
Yeah, I think you did, and I've got a lot to ask you about on this. But let me start with this. Why do you suppose that there isn't an uprising in Portland? Are they blind to it for some reason? Or do they actually support it? Are they afraid to come out? What's the real reason?
Leadership in Multnomah County. So if I were still working in Channel 2, I'd be doing commentaries going, okay, I'm going to be out on the banks of the Willamette River. I'm going to be there at 10 in the morning on a Saturday. I want you all come out and support what I'm doing. Okay, nobody's going to do that. There's nobody in town going to do that with any visibility at all. Number two, unfortunately, because there are many, many, many good people in Portland and Multnomah County, and I have friends there, most people are selfish. All right? They're into their own pursuits. They're doing whatever they want to do. And you know what? This is an annoyance, but yeah, I don't really want to spend time on this. And then maybe they'll not like me, and maybe Antifa will hit me, or I'm not going to do it. It's a selfish thing. And it's not just in Portland, Oregon. I mean, we have to really, as a people, we really have to start to rise up and say, hey, you know what? We want due process. We want a presumption of innocence. We don't want thugs on the streets in masks beating people up and telling women that their husband should rot in a grave. We don't want that. Okay, so in Portland, do we have any Democratic? Because it's all Democrats, 100%. Got any politicians there? Got the governor of Oregon doing anything about this? Saying anything about it? No. No, no, no. Uh-uh. And that's how far we've come. That's how far we've declined.
So, Bill, I want to talk to you a little bit more about this, and just one thing on. And when you say we've got to stand up and fight this, I'd like to hear your opinion on what exactly that means. But also, when we come back, I want to take you to Saudi Arabia. Things have gotten even more bizarre. Now they're saying that Khashoggi was alive and aware as they were dismembering him. It is just an amazing story. I'd love to hear your take on it. And also, if you were the president or advising the president, what would you do when we come back? Bill, the frustration is growing in America. The press is excusing Antifa. They are excusing everything that Democrats are saying. Another Democrat up in Minnesota came out over the weekend and said it's time to bring the guillotines out for the Republicans. I mean, it's remarkable what is being said and dismissed when there is actual violence on the streets. You said a minute ago, you know, rise up and fight this. How do you do that and not make things worse?
Well, I think you do it peacefully, number one. And I think that various people have to say, you know, let's get a little group together and maybe we go out and stand in the park with some signs saying whatever. Or maybe we write a letter to the editor of our local newspaper with 500 signatures attached to it. So the Oregonian, for example, a very left-wing newspaper, you know, you say, okay, we'd like to have some space for an op-ed. We have a community group, and this is the way we feel about it. There are things you can do to be visible in your local community. It doesn't have to be a big national thing, because that's almost impossible. But I'm trying to get people to understand the evil that's growing in America, which is, you know, what killing the SS is really essentially about. And a lot of people still want to look away at it. They don't want to engage. And if we continue down this road with the press being, as you just pointed out, solidly aligned with the most progressive, the most anarchistic elements in our society, the press sympathizes with all of them. They sympathize with open borders. They sympathize with legalized narcotics. They sympathize with not prosecuting violent crimes. The press en masse is an agency now that advances socialism and progressive causes. That's the big difference. We didn't have that. We always had a left-wing press, but we didn't have an activist left-wing press, and that's what we have now.
Well, let me ask you this. I beg to differ with you on the activist press. If you look at, you know, the 1960s, some of them, we don't have it. We've never had it like this, but we have had it in the past. If somebody stood up, let's say, you know, some group with standing in the community stood up and they did a nonviolent, you know, protest, a nonviolent march, a march for justice and nonviolence or whatever.
Right.
And they followed the King rules where you just never swing back. That group most likely is going to be beaten for doing it by Antifa. But in the 1960s, the press played that coverage. I don't think the press plays that coverage this time.
No, somebody else will take a cell phone video and throw it out, which is what happened over the weekend.
Is that enough?
And any group doing that would have to hire security. They'd have to hire people to protect them. You can do this. It just takes leadership. It takes organization. But on the press thing, look, let's segue into Saudi Arabia now, because the press is actively trying to goad, you saw it on 60 Minutes, mm-hmm. you saw Leslie Stahl try to do it, Trump into basically dismissing Saudi Arabia, all right? Well, they want to not trade with them, they want to crush that nation because the nation is, quote-unquote, bad. Okay, I'm not going to stick up for Saudi Arabia, it is bad. But Saudi Arabia is the bulwark against Iran in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
It's the leader of Jordan and Egypt and that movement to blunt Iran's terrorism and destruction of Israel. Saudi Arabia is leading that charge. So why on earth does the American left want to destroy that nation when in history we allied ourselves with Stalin, who was killing millions of people while we were allied with him because we had to defeat Hitler? All right, and you can just give 1,000 other examples of countries that we had to do business with that were bad countries for the greater good. But the left-wing press now says to Trump, you're an idiot because you're not destroying Saudi Arabia. You should destroy them and then not trade with them, sanction them, boycott them, all of that. And then you turn around and go, the unintended consequence of that is that the whole alliance against Iran falls apart. And Iran is empowered 8 times as much as they are now.
And so is the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah, and the left-wing press doesn't care. What happened to ISIS? Have you seen one article from the mainstream media about how the Trump administration destroyed ISIS?
No.
Have you seen one?
No.
Under Obama, ISIS ran wild and killed tens of thousands of innocent people. For 8 years. Trump gets in there, and the first year he wipes them out because of Mattis, the defense secretary. And he didn't do it in a very public way. It was all done behind the scenes. But you can get those articles. You can get those stories.
All right.
Nobody even tried to get them.
All right. So, Bill, here's the problem with Saudi Arabia, as I see it. You're exactly right. You know, we're in a no-win situation. In fact, I think we're in a lose-lose situation here. Standing with people who we've known forever. They do this kind of thing all the time.
Yeah.
They're bad people. We shouldn't have been in bed with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia in the first place, but we were, and now they're a strong ally that is one of the only ones that is standing up for Israel, at least quietly, fighting the Muslim Brotherhood and fighting Iran. We have a lot of aligned interest, even though I don't want to be in bed with them. But now, how do you get out?
You can't get out.
Well, but wait a minute. Saudi Arabia, this is different because if there is a tape of this guy being dismembered while he was alive, this will set the world on fire. It's different.
And then you sanction Saudi Arabia in a way that hurts them but doesn't destroy the kingdom. That's what you have to do. So, but look, Trump doesn't have the heart for this. He doesn't want to cancel the arms deals that enrich America. He doesn't want to do it. And the reason that we have a relationship with Saudi Arabia anyway is because they headed OPEC. We needed that oil in the 60s and 70s and 80s.
We don't anymore. But now Silicon Valley takes a lot of their money.
Right. So I say punish them. You know, when it comes out, and I believe firmly they did it.
I do too.
I don't think there's any doubt that they did it. This guy walked into the consulate in Istanbul, the Saudi consulate, and he was butchered or whatever. Okay? They did it. And I believe that Sultan, that guy running the place, he ordered it right to the top. So when that comes out, then Trump has to say, we're going to do this and figure out a way to punish them, but not destroy them. That's what has to happen for the good of America.
And do you think they'll take that punishment? They've said that if we respond, they have to, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just like Turkey when they're letting the pastor out. Erdogan's, oh, I'm not going to let him out. Well, he's out. I mean, Saudi Arabia can't exist without the United States. They can't exist without the United States because Iran will go in there and cause so much trouble that the place will collapse. And so they need the United States. They can say whatever they want to say. They need us, and they've got to pay a price for this. They absolutely have to pay a price for it.
Do you think Turkey has the tape, or is this bluster?
How could I possibly know, Beck?
Well, I mean,
I've been to Turkey three times. All right, I don't know what tape they have or what channel they watch. I don't know anything what they do.
I would think the leading national strategist in politics would at least have some idea.
Some clue, a guess on it. I mean, I would think so, too.
In the Saudi consulate is Saudi Arabian territory. The Turks have no access. They did go in, by the way, which is interesting. And they say, yeah, we found some chemical agents and somebody painted something. But let's just wait. But I don't think anybody listening to us right now should have any doubt that this guy was assassinated by the Saudi government.
It's amazing how close this is to Rear Window, the Hitchcock movie. I mean, it's really, I mean, it's, you know, if the Muslim Brotherhood and giant swords were involved. Bill, always good to talk to you. The book, Killing the SS, absolutely worth the read. It applies to today, shows real heroes and real villains that got away with it for quite some time.
Yeah, and I want to tell everybody I had Beck on the No Spin News on BillO'Reilly.com yesterday for a rollicking 20-minute interview, which we've posted now, so anybody can see it. You don't have to be a premium member to watch it.
You were pretty tame. I thought maybe were asleep for a while.
You and I are simpatico on most issues now.
I don't know about that, but
I think it's because having me on every week, you've now thought about, you know, Bill is really right. Moderated your position.
My way. I think you stopped saying, oh, Beck, oh, that's crazy.
I did point out was that you're looking more and more like Colonel Sanders every day.
And I feel sorry for the Colonel because he's being told every day you look more and more like Glenn Beck. And he's like, I'm the chicken guy.
People actually walk up to you and order tubs of chicken and mashed potatoes. Do they actually do that?
Like they think that they're going to get a tub of chicken away from me? I don't think so. Bill, good to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Right.
BillO'Reilly.com. Sponsor this half hour is Blinds.com. We all have experience with Blinds.com. They changed the look of my master bedroom. I mean, I bought this house, and I swear to you, it was like Donald Trump decorated it when I bought it. It was a little
gold, or
a little over the top, Mm-hmm. And you know, the bedroom is the last thing that, at least in my family, it's the last thing that gets anything. You know, it's because nobody goes in there except, you know, for the family. And so, you know, you're just like, we'll spend money on that later. I think I gave to my wife as maybe her anniversary present or something that we would finally redo our master bedroom. And we had a Blinds.com help us. And it's beautiful. It's real. Just changing the drapes in a room changes everything.
They're good at helping you actually figure out what to do too, because I have no eye for that. You do. You have a really good
eye.
I can't,
when it comes to something big like the drapes and stuff, that's one step that I don't know.
Yeah, because you can take pictures and send them to them, and they'll actually look at them and help you design.
Here's
what we think would look good.
Right, and then they'll put the drapes in the picture, and you'll be like, okay, that's great. They'll put the blinds, and they'll show you. And when you see it, it's totally different. I mean, and it really, if you don't have the imagination or the eye to do that, which most people don't, they'll do it. And it's free. Right now, you can order through October 30th, and you'll save up to 40% plus an additional 5% off site-wide with the promo code BECK. It's Blinds.com. 40% plus an additional 5% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Promo code BECK. Rules and restrictions do apply. So I had forgotten it was yesterday. Whoa, sometimes the days are long. Yesterday I did an interview with Bill O'Reilly. You can find it at BillO'Reilly.com. And it is free. You don't have to go behind the paywall, but you could always support Bill and go behind the paywall. Also, I believe I'm on with Dave Rubin today on the Rubin Report. He was in town, so we recorded something here for his program. And we kind of hit a little bit of all of it. So join me on the Rubin Report today with Dave Rubin, also on Bill O'Reilly's program. And Stu is going to be on the couch, I think. I'm not really sure what you bring to the table, man. I'm slaving. I'm working my brains out.
Yeah, you definitely seem like you're doing that. You're showing the signs of it. Let's put it that way.
That my brains
are been worked out. You look as if you're working about six times more hours than there are in the day, which is...
Yeah.
What I'm saying is your appearance is a negative.
Sliding. Yeah,
it's
I know.
Showing
thank you. Thank you. I
appreciate weathered is the...
Yes. Yeah, thank you. No. I appreciate that.
Oh, okay.
By the way, I want to thank everybody who has supported The Blaze and supported us, especially over the last few years. I mean, it's been a rough few years. Our subscriptions are up and our visits to the website, you know, back over a million, a day, which is fantastic. And we're thrilled. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for watching and listening to our podcast. Thank you for finding The Blaze News on Apple News. We're making a big impact now on Apple News, which is really fantastic. So we thank you for sticking with us and just stick around because we have some really good things coming your way. And an announcement, well, I was supposed to make it this week and it keeps getting delayed. And so it may have to be next week because I'm not going to be here tomorrow or the next.
Glenn has purchased the Cleveland Browns and
yes.
will be running that franchise from now on.
Yes. So,
so hopefully you're excited for that in Cleveland.
Yeah.
He knows doesn't know anything about sports, but...
No. No, I'm not even sure if that's baseball or football, mm-hmm. but could be basketball.
Well, your big issue with them was you wanted to change their brown costumes.
Yeah, I don't like their brown costumes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's one of the things. I think that's, you know, why they're, you know, either really good or really bad. I'm not sure.
Right.
But they have to have the costumes changed because they're not. That's not good.
You're a bit of a fashionista.
Mm-hmm. Well, but I'm also very into Ohio sports, you know, the Cavs.
The Cavs.
I mm-hmm. thought that was a really stupid name because, I mean, why a baby cow? I mean, mm-hmm. who's afraid of a baby cow? They're not fast. They have hooves. They can't.
Have you considered, but maybe it's the muscles on the back of your leg. Not that you have.
I never thought of it that way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that would be better. But what a I mean, what is your,
jump. There's a lot of jumping in basketball.
Yeah, I know, but what, you know, what's the mascot look like?
The back of a leg.
Yeah,
that's what I would go with.
Really,
I don't know. There's another direction really, per se.
Yeah, that would be really kind of weird.
How do you feel about the Indians? Are you offended by?
No, I love the Indians. I love the Indians. Mm-hmm. I think actually we should start a team of some sort, and we should come up with a Native American name ourselves.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I'm a
people seem to be going the other way. They're all deleting
yeah,
their
and I
Indian
think
names.
It's about time that we go the other way.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's about time. I kind of had enough of it. So, you know, if you have a name for something, you know, that we start a baseball team or, you know, something, you know, just inside the Blaze, that'd be cool. You can send us the team name and the mascot, and we'll get together and have a powwow about it and see what we can do.
Glenn Beck.
It's Wednesday, October 17th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So we have Ephraim Matos in with us, and Ephraim was with us a couple months ago, I think. And he has put out a new book called City of Death, Humanitarian Warriors in the Battle of Mosul.
Yes.
Welcome. Glad you're
Thank
here.
You. Thank you for having me back on.
You bet. So tell me a little bit about the battle and recap where we've been together before with this book. So tell the story.
Okay. So last time I was on, we talked about the book and we talked about the Nazarene Fund. So the book is about a journey I basically went on last year, a humanitarian work I did in northern Iraq to help with the fight against ISIS. So as a former SEAL, it was a natural fit for me to go and help. And now I originally thought I was just going to be doing, you know, the standard humanitarian thing of handing out water bottles, doing a little bit of medical aid. Well, when I got in there, the team I was with, a group called the Free Burma Rangers, we ended up embedding with the Iraqi army and basically becoming their frontline medical support because they just don't have the resources to do that themselves. And so I was not a medic. I was a sniper. But I had pretty good medical training from my time as a SEAL. And so we actually ended up being involved in the direct assault into Mosul to open up the Western Front in Mosul and finally collapse the caliphate in Mosul. And we were in the city for about 30 days from the day that we entered the city to the day that I ended up getting shot on a rescue mission. It was exactly 30 days. And what happened in Mosul was just, it was something I thought I would never see in my lifetime. You see evil, you see pictures of World War II, you see killing fields, you see these black and white photos, and you think, I'll never see something like that. You know, there's a certain amount of denial that you have. Well, I saw it, and it was real. And so in City of Death, I talk about my experience of going in there and sort of being caught off guard with the amount of violence and the fighting that was happening. But more importantly, the acts of heroism on the side of the Iraqi army and of the other guys I was with. It was amazing to see these guys laying down their lives for others.
Give us an example of you know, that black and white film and then the heroism around it.
So yeah, you look at old World War II photos, right? You got these black and white pictures of killing fields. Well, on June 2nd of last year, it was early morning and we saw a fresh killing field. We were literally at the very, very front edge of the Iraqi army advance. And we looked out into this, what it used to have been a 6-lane highway through the city. It was completely rubbled and mortar holes, and it was completely rubbled. But we started seeing bodies. We started seeing bodies of dead kids, elderly people. There was a man in a wheelchair slumped over. He'd been executed. And we started seeing dozens and dozens of bodies. And so in City of Death, I talk about how we got up there. We saw what was happening. But as bad as it was, we saw people still alive in the bodies. There were children walking around and unwounded, and they were in shock. And they'd been out there for about 36 hours at this point. And their dead relatives are everywhere, and they're going around from body to body trying to find water, trying to find food. And so we saw four kids alive and two wounded men slumped up against a wall in a pile of about 20 bodies. The most grotesque, terrible thing you can imagine.
Why did they do this? Why were all these people executed at the end?
These people were executed because they were leaving the caliphate. These were people who had endured more than likely the full 3 years of the ISIS occupation in Mosul, and they were done. They wanted to leave. They wanted to get out of there because as the noose was tightening around the neck of ISIS, you know, supplies and food and water were becoming more and more scarce. And so ISIS was stealing all that from the civilians. And so living behind the ISIS wall in Mosul was absolute hell for these people. So they tried to break free and run away. And so when these people ran away as a large group, ISIS massacred. I think that day there was more than 150 people just slaughtered in the street because they went right by the ISIS headquarters.
How did the ISIS people, I've heard that they've kind of gone back in. They've just kind of morphed back into a lot of society. Is that true?
We did come across a lot of guys trying to blend in with society and kind of get out of there. And that has happened. So ISIS is definitely having a bit of a resurgence in Iraq right now. So they went underground, you know, and it was neighbors and just people who've all lived together, right? So these guys blend in. They're from the city of Mosul, ISIS. That's where these guys are from. And so they were able to blend back into society, a lot of them. And so now we're seeing a bit of a resurgence. However, the guys that we were seeing toward the end of the fight in Mosul, a lot of these guys were actually white European guys, a lot of Chechens and things like that. And the reason for that is because they have no choice but to fight and die. They can't assimilate back into society. They can't run away because they look like me. They're white guys, red beards, and they can't get away. So those guys had to fight it out all the way to the end, and they know they're going to die, and they just didn't care. And so, yeah.
So you went from that to saying, I've got to keep doing this. And that brought you to Burma, right?
Yes.
And now you're working with the Nazarene Fund.
Yes.
In Burma.
Yes.
And last we talked, you were the only one in Burma, and you started telling us about what was really happening. And you have an update for us.
Yes, absolutely. So also to clarify, I'm not the only one working in Burma. I'm the only one from the Nazarene Fund working in Burma.
You were telling me that you were trying to organize a bunch of people.
Yes.
And you were going to bring them all together.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I just got back from a trip about a week and a half ago, and I met with a lot of the tribal leaders and the guys who run stuff across the border, and they are more than they are beyond ecstatic to have the Nazarene Fund's help.
Okay, now this is a group of Christians?
Yes, about 50% Christian, about 50% Buddhist.
Okay.
All the leaders of the, it's called the Karen tribe, and they are, all of their leaders, about 90% of their leaders are Christian. So every time I meet with them, we pray at the beginning and at the end, and it's a really, really good thing. And so I met with these guys, and I explained to them like what we can do, and I'd already been working in there. I'd already done several trips with the Nazarene Fund in there. And they are beyond ecstatic to have us, because when I was there, literally while I was there, the Burma army just moved in 350 more troops to attack their positions, to attack the civilians in Karen State. So we just saw what happened last year with the Rohingya. And then the Burma army moved all of those same troops up to the north to attack the Kachin, another ethnic group. And so now they're starting to bring troops down to attack the Karen. And that's where we're there on the ground, helping keep people alive.
So why are they doing this? Why are they doing this to these tribes?
It's an ethnic thing. It's a racist thing is essentially what it is. It goes back 1,000 years of the ethnic Burmans who control the Irrawaddy Valley, sort of in the center of Burma. They want to control all the highlands. They want to control the entire region. And so if you're a different ethnicity, you can, they'll let you live there, but you have to be sort of a subject, serf class. You have to basically serve the Burmans. And also the, for example, like the Karen, they live in the hills, and the Karen hills are full of natural resources. So there's a lot of that going on. Plus they don't like you because you're Christian, right? That just adds a whole nother level of hatred. Because you know, Christians don't put up with being oppressed. They don't put up with it, because where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Right. And so because of that, the Burma army attacks them even more.
Tell me what you brought me.
So I brought with me several photos.
One second. Do we have somebody? Where is Marissa? It's past there.
I apologize.
That's
Thank
okay.
You. So I brought with me several photos of what I see all the time when I go to these places. And these are, I brought with me photos, sorry, of one particular attack that happened. This is from 2010, right? So it seems like a long time ago, but these are the only photos that they were able to get out to me. I was asking these guys, like, hey, I need photos of what's happening and what's going on. And in these photos, you see dead civilians, you see kids dead, a baby, and these are not accidental collateral damage. These are intentional executions of these people.
Some of these are kids.
That's a baby.
Baby.
That's a baby. Intentionally killed. And that baby didn't die right away. It survived for about 24 hours and then died.
And this just looks like it's in the woods.
Yeah, they're out in the jungle. These people have nothing, and the Burma army still wants to attack them and take more from them. And so every time I go there, every time the Nazarene Fund shows up, we're stopping that from happening. And I'll tell you a quick story. Back in May, I was there, and I can't divulge exactly what we were exactly the our, yeah. for security operations, exactly what was happening. Suffice it to say, we saved a lot of people's lives. And a villager who had been pushed out of his home by the Burma army, him and his family had fled the Burma army, and they built a new hut out in the jungle in the middle of nowhere. He heard that the Nazarene Fund was there, and he came and found me, and he said, "Hey, I want to thank you. Please come to my house for dinner tonight." So they get me on a motorcycle, and I drive to this man's house in the middle of nowhere. When I get in there, his wife is cooking pig fat for me to eat, because they have pig fat and rice and bamboo leaves. And so we're sitting there, and he's like, "Hey, I wish I had more to give you." He's like, "This is all I have for a snack." And he pulls out a bag, and it's literally tree bark. It's bark from a tree. And he's like, "This is all we have to snack on while my wife prepares food." And he gave me tree bark to eat. And I'm sitting there chewing on tree bark with this guy, and he has nothing. He has literally nothing. And he wanted to give me tree bark because that was the best that he had. And so I'm sitting there chewing on tree bark with this man. And I was so overcome. I was just like, his gratitude, the level of gratitude he showed for us, for the Nazarene Fund being there, it was unbelievable. It was so touching. And then later on, as I was leaving the jungle, another man barely speaks any English. I'm on a motorcycle and he's driving me out of the jungle, and as he's driving, he turns to me, and he says, "Thank you." And I said, "Oh, good English. What?" I'm trying to pimp him and talk more about, use more English. And so I was like, "Oh, like what are you grateful for? What, you know?"
Yeah.
And he said, "This is amazing." He said, "Thank you for giving my people hope." That's what he says to me. This kid who's maybe 19 years old, they know nothing but slaughter and massacre and these terrible things, but we're there to bring hope and we're there to bring help. And it's an honor to be there. It's an honor to represent the Nazarene Fund. It's an honor to do what I do. Every time we go out, we save people's lives, and it's an incredible thing. And we keep things like those photos that you're looking at. You can't even show them. We keep things like that from happening.
Torn on. It doesn't become real to people until they see it, and then you don't want to show it because it's awful. It's awful. It's horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what to do with them.
I think, I'm not sure, but I think we have them on the NazareneFund.org. If people want to go over there and see firsthand, like what's happening, I believe they're up there. If they're not, I'll make sure that they get on there today. They're over there.
Yeah. Don't go for, it's their children in a baby, and it's not pretty. But if it will help you wake up to what's happening, if it will help you wake someone else up, then please go. But we would sure appreciate your help. The Nazarene Fund has turned into this global thing that is just remarkable. Countries all around the world now know its name as a beacon of hope. And
indeed,
we are thrilled that you're part of it. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for letting me be a part of it. It's an incredible honor to do what I do.
Your book is well worth the read. If you want to know and be put into it, but put into it for a good reason. I mean, here's a guy who, you know, was a Navy SEAL and says, "I can do more." It's called The City of Death, and it's available everywhere now. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Glenn.
God bless. There's some things you just can't unsee. Let me tell you about our sponsor this half hour. It is LifeLock. LifeLock. I could not sleep last night, so I started a book. Let me see if I can find it real quick. I started this book, and it's about cybersecurity. And oh my gosh, oh dear God, what's happening now is so remarkable. That you don't even have to think, well, what's coming next? What's happening now is crazy. It's called Future Crimes. Everything is connected. Everyone is vulnerable, and what you can do about it, by Mark Goodman. Holy cow, it'll make your hair fall out. Cybercrime is the future, and everything is connected, and one weak link and you're toast. Now, there's LifeLock out there, LifeLock Identity Theft Protection, but they have added the power now of Norton Security to help protect you against the threats that, you know, on your identity and also on your devices that you can't see or fix on your own. Nobody can stop all cyber threat, prevent all identity theft, or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But now LifeLock with Norton Security will see the threats that you might miss on your own. So go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code Beck at 1-800-LIFELOCK or LifeLock.com. Use the promo code Beck. You get an extra 10% off your first year, plus a $25 Amazon gift card with your annual enrollment. It's promo code Beck at 1-800-LIFELOCK or LifeLock.com. Terms and conditions do apply. It's hard to believe that this stuff is going on today in the world that we're living in. Did you see what China said yesterday? They came out about the Uyghurs and the concentration camps that they're. I'm sorry, the vocational schools that they're building.
It helps make life more colorful.
Yeah, that's what they actually said. We're just trying to help make life more colorful. They've got 1 million people already behind these gates, razor wire fences. They are concentration camps. That's what they are. And you're scooped up off the street in China, and you're put behind these walls, and you're re-educated. It's frightening what is happening. And the world is not standing up. And more importantly, I mean, just look up. I just looked up at CNN. Trump says he's not to blame if GOP loses. Who cares? I mean, CNN, can you just get over it for 10 seconds? Is there nothing else important going on in the world?
They're not the only ones guilty of this, but there is CNN in particular. It treats like Donald Trump, like almost the reverse of a teenager in a boy band. It's like the obsession level is incredibly high. Now, they're, of course, looking at it as a negative instead of a positive. But like they just are obsessed with this person.
Yeah.
I mean, it's seemingly all their thoughts are dominated by him.
Yeah, it's all that matters.
The whole thing about living rent-free inside someone else's head, I mean, is so on display with CNN right now. They can't talk about anything else, even when they're talking about other things.
Saudi Arabia. Now Saudi Arabia, he's in trouble. You know, does Trump have ties to Saudi Arabia? He's talked about his ties to Saudi Arabia. God, they cut somebody up alive. Alive. They butchered him alive. Cut him up and put him in a suitcase. And you're looking for a way, an angle to get Trump? What is wrong with you people? What's wrong with you?
It's like legitimately like a sickness for some of them. It's not everybody on CNN. But I mean, it is. It's as a network, as a whole, they can't figure out a way to discuss any other topic. It is really incredible. I mean, he really does dominate their lives. Every aspect, at least their public life. I don't know, maybe they go home and don't talk about it. I don't know. But when they're on TV, they're talking about it all the time. It's like there's got to be something else interesting in the world. There's got to be.
Well, just look at the headline at Fox. They're talking about Elizabeth Warren and, you know, her Cherokee heritage. Really?
I mean, all of these stories, like the Elizabeth Warren thing is interesting because she's going to be running for president. It's a day or two story. I think it's at this point I'm done with it. But it was interesting to see her. I mean, a real flop here. But we're talking about one of the all time political flops.
Yes.
She tried to come out and get ahead of this
story. Yeah. Again, it is an important political story for somebody who is going to run for president.
Yeah.
But really, with Saudi Arabia going on right now with that and what that possibly means, shouldn't we take a pause and look at some of the stock market? Anybody know why yet?
Glenn,
anybody talking about that? Why is it down?
Mercury.
Welcome to the program. So glad that you are here. We're going on tour here soon, and we would love to see you. Grab your tickets now at glennbeck.com tour. We're coming to a theater near you. It's Richmond, Hershey, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Kansas City, Tulsa, Tampa, Orlando, and other cities around you. Make sure that you grab your tickets. You can do it at glennbeck.com/tour. We're going to see if you can spend as much as a Democratic Socialist. It's a game show that I don't think you can win.
We all lose in the end in that game.
Yeah, we do.
Is the sad part. But sometimes, though, Democrats can be very positive for Republicans. Sometimes Democratic candidates are big wins for Republicans.
Really?
And we're seeing a case of this here, it appears, in Texas, where Beto O'Rourke, or Robert Francis O'Rourke, you know, as his parents wanted him to be known, is going
or
against
Bob,
Ted
as
Cruz.
He used to call himself.
Right, when it was cool, when it's beneficial to be called Bob, he called himself Bob.
Yeah.
Now he calls himself Beto.
Right.
So Beto is running here in Texas, and if you haven't seen this, you haven't been watching any national media as far as, and not just politics. I'm talking outside of that, Ellen and Colbert.
He's everywhere.
Got a CNN town hall coming up tonight. Just him.
Again, it's bizarre. The reason why it's helpful for Republicans is Beto O'Rourke has drained the Democratic donor base out of $38 million.
And he's going
that
to lose.
Could have gone to close races. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it all mm-hmm. seems like Cruz is winning here and mm-hmm. winning by a significant margin, though we don't, obviously, we still have a few weeks to go. We know this could change. But,
well, they could produce the pictures of his father actually pulling the trigger on JFK.
And that may need to be, you actually may need that.
Yeah. They might have it. You never know.
They might. They're talking now about a 50 to 43 margin is the, so 7 point, or excuse me, 50 to 45 is the margin now with Cruz leading by 7 points. This is from, by the way, the same company that is hosting the town hall with Beto tonight, CNN, as their poll, 52-45.
I think he wins by 12 and maybe as high as 18.
I mean, that would be a real surprise.
No, it would be. But, you know, that's 18, what, yeah, I mean, it's what really what happened last time Ted Cruz ran. I mean, the polls are hard in Texas. I don't necessarily believe the polls here in Texas. You know, it'd be great if he won by 3. But I just think that there is something that, you know, when you get right down to it, Texans are going to say, yeah, Ted Cruz, please.
I tend to think he's going to win as well. I don't know about 18. You know, maybe I think 10's possible, though. I mean, 9 or 10 is definitely possible. Interesting in this poll. First of all, what you see is Greg Abbott, who's running for governor here in Texas, is winning by a much larger margin. Usually it's around, I don't have the one right in front of me, but it's over 20 points.
Yeah, I don't even think I've seen a sign for him.
Here it is. Yeah, I know. No one cares. He's winning by so much. He's up by 18 points here. So Cruz is up by 7 in the same poll where Abbott is up by 18. And what's interesting about comparing the results in the same poll is it's the same people. The same people were asked the questions. And so you kind of get a sense of where people are splitting up. For example, much more people are voting for Greg Abbott than are voting for Ted Cruz out of the exact same base. The other thing that's interesting about it is the you think of, it's bright red country, right, in mm-hmm. Texas. Mm-hmm. However, the poll shows that 50% of adults disapprove of Donald Trump's job performance and only 41% approve. That gets closer among likely voters where it's 49-48. But still, it's surprising. I would think that would be more in the positive in a state like Texas.
Look at it this way. Try this on for size. Donald Trump is everywhere, and he is either blamed or excused for everything, mm-hmm. right? And it's dominating your life, just like Barack Obama was dominating everybody's life. And Donald Trump has a really good side and a really bad side, and it depends on what day you're like, you know, if you support Donald Trump, some days you're like, yeah. Other days you're like, oh, what can we not talk about today? And I don't want to talk about the tweet, you know? Mm-hmm. So he's such a big figure in everybody's life. Ted Cruz was a very big picture or a big, big force in everybody's life 2 years ago, but he's just kind of fallen off the map and he's just doing a good job. Okay. Mm-hmm. Greg Abbott is just doing a good job and nobody's talking about him. Nobody's talking about him because the state's running great. Everything's going really well. He's a great governor. He's not controversial. So I think the poll numbers are just how much has this person impacted my life in a kind of in a bad way of, oh, got to deal with this again today. I got to talk about this again.
Yeah, you get closer. You get to fatigue, right?
And it's not a bad thing about any of them. It's just like, oh, I'm so tired of this. Mm-hmm. I'm tired. You know, it's like the closer you get to Washington, Greg Abbott is here. Ted Cruz is in Washington. But, you know, really the epicenter now and with the last president is the White House. And so the closer you get, the more you're like, oh, enough.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I mean, it's nice to see, I think, you know, especially if Cruz just holds onto this race, which it seems like he will at the moment. It's going to help a lot of other candidates in really close races. There are 6 toss-up races right now, Arizona, Florida, Indiana, Missouri, Montana, and Nevada. All of them are very tight. You know, the fact that this $38 million is not flowing into a race in that group is a real positive for Republicans. Democrats are very excited about Beto, but I mean, his chances of winning are very low.
And they've just thrown money at a candidate who has essentially, I mean, a very small chance of winning. I wouldn't say it's no chance, but a very small chance of winning. And, you know, that's only benefiting Republican chances of keeping the Senate.
But they are, here's what's happening. They've made him into a national figure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're already, by putting him on Ellen, why is he on Ellen?
I don't know. What has he done?
I mean,
what's that guy done? He's like responsible for absolutely nothing.
Right.
He's not some like up and coming outsider, right? Like, he's a guy who's been in Congress for a long time. He has been in politics for a very long time. His whole life has basically been politics outside of his early band years. I swear it's just because they think he's good looking. They think he's good looking and he can give a good speech.
Yeah, I think it's the Barack Obama syndrome of 2004. What has this guy done? He gave a good speech in 2004. Well, he should be president. What has this guy done? Well, he's been on Ellen. I mean, it's not just that he's good looking. I think that there is a part of the Democratic Party that does not want to go the democratic socialism, anti-capitalist sort of way. And Beto doesn't look like that.
He doesn't look like it. His policies are the same as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Correct.
I mean, they went through them in the debate clips last night. Should we play some of these?
Yes, go ahead.
First of all, let's start with Beto's opening. Now, you may know Beto is he's a Hispanic.
No,
Hispanic.
No, his name is Robert
actually
Francis.
Moved here from Central America.
No.
Very recently.
He's Irish.
And he came out and made sure you knew how Hispanic he was in
his
opening.
Less Hispanic than Elizabeth Warren is Cherokee.
I don't know what you're talking about. Here's Beto's open.
First, Jason, let me thank you and Sarah for moderating tonight's debate. Ken's Five for hosting us, the people of San Antonio for being here, and the people of Texas for watching this and participating in one of the most important decisions of our lifetimes. Es un honor estar aquí con ustedes otra vez aquí in San Antonio.
Yes, see, powerful. See how Hispanic he is? He can't even stop himself from speaking Spanish. Mm-hmm. He was trying to speak in English that entire time and just slipped into it because it's so natural for him coming from his deep Hispanic roots. And that's something I want you to make sure you understand. Unlike this old white guy, Ted Cruz.
No, he's not white.
Who is basic. I mean, it's so ridiculous. Ted Cruz, this old white guy who's, I think, a year and a half to 2 years older than Beto O'Rourke or Robert Francis O'Rourke, as
he's not
hate
white.
We'll call him. And anyway, so it was interesting to watch this because, you know, it's like, as you kind of pointed out, you know, Cruz runs for president. He doesn't win. And he's been, you know, you don't hear from him as often as you did.
But he's been doing a great job.
His voting record is very solid. I think, you know, anybody, whether you like Trump or you don't like Trump, you're going to like the stuff he votes for.
The stuff he's doing behind the scenes with the judiciary, and I don't mean just the Supreme Court, I mean the federal courts, is remarkable and will change the course of court decisions for a very long time.
Yeah, he's been very involved in that.
Very involved in that.
However, Beto, I don't know. I mean, I get the idea that maybe he's younger and good-looking and can speak coherently. I think that's the only thing is attractive to him.
A lot of neck muscles.
Yeah, a lot of neck muscles, very shiny as well, very shiny.
Yeah.
But he talked about Cruz and his motivations. Remember, this is a guy who's brought in the only story about Beto O'Rourke of any note is he's raised a lot of money. That is the entire reason anyone would ever discuss him, because he has raised a fortune. But of course, he goes after Cruz over money. Listen.
Speaking of balance and budgets, only one of us has, with good friends in El Paso, started a small business. Met that payroll every week, balanced the books, made sure that we delivered for our clients. Only one of us has served at the local government level. Every single year, balancing the budget, seeing each other not as Republicans and Democrats, but as council members entrusted with a fiduciary responsibility to deliver for the taxpayers of El Paso. Every single year we did. And for Senator Cruz to say that this isn't going to bust the budget at a time of $21 trillion in debt, when we're on track to deficit spend to the tune of $1 trillion a year, he voted to add $2 trillion. And those tax cuts disproportionately will flow to corporations who are already sitting on record piles of cash and the already wealthy in a country that is riven with income inequality unseen since the last Gilded Age. Why? In the days just before and just after that vote, Senator Cruz accepted $120,000 from the political action committees who represent the corporate interests that benefited from this tax cut. Why does he vote for this? Why does he vote for internet companies to sell your private browsing data to the highest bidder without your consent? Why does he not vote for universal background checks in a country that loses 30,000 people to gun violence every year? Follow the money. In each of these cases, if you look at the Political Action Committee contributions to Senator Cruz, it helps to explain the reasons for his vote and how corrupted Congress has become.
Now, again,
unbelievable.
$120,000. Really, is Ted Cruz changing an opinion over $120,000? It's ridiculous. If Cruz dropped out of the Senate right now, he'd get a lobbying job at some firm and make millions without even thinking about it. He was, he's highly educated. His wife worked at Goldman Sachs, if we remember. This is not a money issue for Cruz. Beyond that, of course, Beto O'Rourke has accepted, has had many ads run on his behalf. He's from PACs and super PACs. And he's got that little, that little line of, well, I'm not telling them to do it, so therefore I'm not responsible for it. But again, he's raised $38 million. He's complaining about a $120,000 donation to Cruz that makes him change his opinion. What does $38 million do? What does that make you change?
I'll tell you what it does. I think $38 million for some makes you into a national candidate for another race, not this one. Mm-hmm. For others who have given part of that $38 million in large chunks, that just pisses them off because I want results. I want results. You told me that this guy had a chance. This guy was going to do it. I saw him everywhere, and you still got beaten. Beaten by how much? It wasn't even close. Where's my money?
And I think that's how people would react to that. But
I know people on the Democratic side who have given money who are absolutely that. They have given and given and given, and they're like, I have to tell you, You're off the deep end with crazy radicals, and you're putting up people. Who do you have? This guy? He didn't win. I think that there are some that have given a lot of money that are going to be a little pissed when Robert Francis O'Rourke has to go back on the night shift of walking the beat like all the other cops in his family. We want to give you an update on Mercury One, and we want to thank you for your help in supporting Mercury One and our relief that is going on now for Hurricane Michael. Just today, Operation Barbecue is going to serve 53,000 meals. That is... They go through, those big, huge cans of, the number 10 cans, giant cans of vegetables. Mm-hmm. They go through an entire 18-wheeler tractor trailer full every 3 days.
That's amazing. And they're at every one of these things.
Yeah.
Every time something goes wrong in this country, they're there. It's pretty incredible.
So, that tractor trailer costs us $21,000 per tractor trailer. So every 3 days... We have just for vegetables. That's not even the meat and the potatoes or anything else. That's just the vegetables. Every 3 days, we need $21,000. So we really need your help. Please make a donation. Today, Operation Blessing is out. The Lighthouse Church in Panama City loading 6 tractor trailers to distribute the supplies in the hardest hit areas. Yesterday, they were out with 150 volunteers, and we are proud to support them. All of the donations go directly to the source that needs it. It is mercuryone.org. Please donate now. $5 makes a difference.
Mercury.